We are all champagne bottles waiting to pop. We just need to figure out what type of temperature we're set in. You know, we just need to figure out if we're being shaken too much. We need to figure out if we've dealt with the bubbles and we've let the bubbles settle. And that's part of the healing journey, so that when someone does shake you, they're not shaking you on top of somebody else just finished shaking you, because then you're bound to pop.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Reinvent Health Podcast. Here we get to chat to some of the world's most interesting and influential people about everything to do with physical, mental, and spiritual well-being. If you want to make healthy changes and live a better life, you are in the right place. Please don't forget to rate, leave a review, and share with everyone who wants to live their best life. And now your host, Nikki Robertson.
Welcome to the Reinvent Health Podcast. In this episode, I chat with the highly accomplished South African actor and dancer, Hlungani Dlovu, who's also a director of Matrix Men, the first organization in South Africa that supports male survivors of sexual abuse. This episode is brought to you by my new book, Live Well and Thrive. In the book, you will find my tried and tested methods for making healthy life changes one step at a time, as well as a collection of recipes that break the diet rules. This really means that when you follow the plans laid out in the book, you'll never feel like you're on a diet. You'll have a ton of energy, improve your body composition, sleep better, and find your motivation to live well and thrive. Please don't forget to rate and review the show on Apple Podcast or Spotify or wherever you listen to your content.
Hlungani Dlovu is a true South African A-list actor and hip-hop dancer, appearing in a number of television and stage productions. He co-founded the Dlovu Foundation, a nonprofit that aims to help young people to live their dreams through dancing and drama. He is a co-director of Matrix Men, an organization that provides support to boys and men suffering from abuse and mental health problems. I met Hlungani a couple of weeks ago after giving a talk about nutrition at the University of Johannesburg. We got chatting, and it turned out that Hlungani was there to speak to the students about a very sensitive topic, that being mental, emotional, and sexual abuse of men, something that few of us, unless we're experienced firsthand, give much thought to. Matrix Men is the first organization in South Africa that supports male survivors of sexual abuse. Hlungani, welcome to the Reinvent Health Podcast.
Yee, thank you so much for having me. That was quite the intro.
Oh, I'm so glad you enjoyed it. It was, yeah, but it's all true. You are really a South African superstar, and so many listeners, hopefully, and I'm pretty sure will no doubt know exactly who you are. But for those who don't, can we step back in time and you can draw us maybe a mental picture of your background, who you really are, what inspired your passion? You know, what really struck me when we were in that office with all that food was that you're really passionate about giving, you know, sharing a message and inspiring hope with people who don't know where to turn and who feel hopeless. So where did it all start for you way back when?
Wow. I think it's very difficult for me to like pinpoint when it actually started. But I think growing up the way I did obviously played a big role. So I grew up in a beautiful home with both parents and an older sister, loving, kind, generous, more spoiled than anything, really. I'm the last born. And went to private schools, went to St. Stephen's Boys College for high school. After that, I went to the US to go and study. And then I came back to South Africa in 2015. And I mean, throughout all of this time, I've had my fair share of experiences, from being fondled by family members to a variety of other types of situations, to eventually domestic violence in a romantic relationship. And I think having these different experiences kind of led me to a point where having conversations amongst my friends, the guys particularly, was quite challenging when it comes to these type of topics, you know, because a lot of the time we're not taught to express ourselves. We're not taught to feel the things that we feel. You go to a traditional boarding school and you learn how to be this alpha male, this macho guy. It's either you're the jock or you're the nerd or you're, you know, yeah. So I think all of those things played a role in me eventually finding myself in a space where I'm now in the entertainment industry. I'm somewhat popular, and I have somewhat of a voice for people to pay attention to. Yeah. And I think being Christian kind of led me to how do I use my voice in the best way possible? Because there are many people who have a voice on the platform, who claim to be influential, but are not influential. Yeah. And there are people who are influential and are not influential in a good light. And I think I just wanted to be someone who can bring some light, because there's so much that happens in our world, in our lives on a daily basis. There's people who go to bed hungry and wake up hungry, but yet they have social media, you know, and it's like, how do I make that person feel slightly better about their day without me doing anything that is out of my way in terms of, like, I can't reach everyone. So if they happen to see some of the work that I do, I hope that it enlightens them in some way. It brings some joy or some laughter, or some hope. Because, yeah, I mean, we read the stats about suicide and gender-based violence. Like, really, there's a lot of stuff that is just not, like, good in our society. So I just wanted to be someone who could bring a little bit of light, a little bit of hope, and hopefully make someone feel a bit better about themselves or their day, or their situation.
Sure. You know, I think when you do have a platform, it is your social, spiritual responsibility to do good with that. One of my teachers said, it's just a phrase that always sticks with me, is how big is your classroom? And when you've got the blessing of having a big classroom, you've got to pay it forward. It's very, very important. So, you know, just to go back, when you said you lived a privileged life, and I think a lot of people don't realize or don't think about the fact that abuse transcends poverty and privilege. It's something that everybody, no matter where you are on the spectrum, you know, much money you've got or haven't got, you're going to be susceptible to. So, you know, also when you're growing up and you're going to a good school and you have a stable family, one thinks that you learn boundaries and you learn, you have a certain amount of self-esteem, and that would help you in a situation, but that's not always the case. So, you know, I think a lot of us are also taught to suck it up and don't say no to your teachers and have manners. And manners don't, you know, you can have manners and boundaries, and kids aren't taught this. And this is fundamentally where things have to change. So, you know, to what extent are you comfortable talking about where things started getting uncomfortable for you as a kid?
You know, to be honest, I don't think I realized as a kid what was really happening.
Yeah,
I think at the time it was more just like going through life and whatever was happening at the time, you know, especially because, like, some of the things that happened weren't with, like, older uncles or older aunts. It was like older cousins. Wow. So you would think that, oh, this is like playtime. Mm-hmm. This is what we're supposed to do, I guess, you know. Mm-hmm. Because no one seems like anything is wrong until the day you find out that this is wrong. And then you kind of rewind, and now you're trying to backtrack and figure out, was it my fault? Did I do something to deserve that? You know, all of those kind of things. So growing up, it wasn't any form of like, okay, cool, this is not supposed to happen and it's happened. How do I deal with this? Do I tell my parents? Do I not tell my parents? Yeah. Is he going to be in trouble? Is she going to be in trouble? Mm-hmm. It was only after, I think, I started going to therapy, actually. Yeah. that this came up because I went to therapy for my domestic violence situation. And at the time I was about 21, 22. Mm-hmm. And obviously therapy will have you digging into the backstory and how we find ourselves where we are today. Yeah. And that's really where it started to happen. And I mean, my memories go back to when I was 9 years old. So those were moments where I had to kind of unpack what had happened and how I felt about it. And at the time, I didn't feel any wrongdoing was being done towards me or anything like that. But after discussions and really like unpacking in therapy was when I realized that, okay, I think the way in which I've maneuvered in life has to do with how certain things have happened in the past. So yeah, I don't know if that answers the question.
It really does, because I think an experience of trauma manifests as a way we deal with the world. It doesn't really manifest as a memory or a pain. It can, but it's almost the way we react in the world. And when we react to people and places and situations in a way that isn't serving us, we've got to figure out why. And it usually goes back to a traumatic experience that we didn't even realize was a traumatic experience. And this is like you say, it's really interesting because you didn't think there was a problem. You didn't think bad or badly of a situation until somebody says, well, you know what, you know, how did it really make you feel at the time? You know, were you comfortable? Did you have the vocabulary to stand your ground? And you go, well, no. And when you start looking deeper, you realize you still don't have the vocabulary to stand your ground and tell people what you're comfortable with or not. So, you know, empowering kids from a young age is one step, but I was looking at statistics on the Matrix Men website, and I think there's how many suicides a day by men who feel hopeless and helpless, like they just are meaningless in the world. I think the statistic is frightening. So,
I mean, in South Africa, we right now are looking at 20 men committing suicide on a daily basis.
Horrible.
You know, and I think because one, we don't have, or rather we're not taught, we can learn, but it takes one acknowledging and realizing that they don't have the vocabulary to express themselves. Yes. And that they have to learn that vocabulary in order to be able to express themselves so that they don't find themselves in positions where they feel isolated, they feel alone, they feel like no one understands what they're going through or no one will understand what they're going through. Or that what they're going through is not even valid, you know, because I don't know about other cultures, but in the Black culture, we have this thing where men don't cry, you know, and there's this saying that you'll ask someone like, how are you doing? And the response will be, crying doesn't help.
Ah, that's
literally the direct translation. Which is in Zulu, crying doesn't help. And it's like, do you understand how much you must be going through to say that crying doesn't help? And yet you're not like seeking any form of help elsewhere or expressing yourself in any other way that I'm going through this and that. It's literally crying doesn't help. Let's keep it moving. So there's a lot of men that definitely need to heal. And I think it starts from a young age, you know, with the stats that we deal with. And now we're trying to gather our own stats just to update the stats, which basically state that about 44% of all boys in South Africa by the age of 18 would have experienced sexual abuse. That is a massive number. You know, and that basically translates to the men in our country, you know, and if we're looking at it from, even if we just take it from the 2000s, right, prior to that, so many men were under the apartheid regime. How many of them have received help, whether from being the oppressor or not the oppressor. Like, there's people who were on the other side who experienced things that they weren't willing to experience. And then there's people on the other side who experienced things that they weren't willing to experience. And it's like, everybody needs help.
Yes.
But we've just had this thing where it's like, no, life goes on. You know, we say sorry and just life goes on. Like, yes, life goes on, but how do we deal with the things that we've experienced? Because we can't unsee some of the things we've seen.
Yeah.
We know what happens with veterans when they come back from war and so forth. So we know what PTSD does. We've seen the evidence, but yet we still don't have places that are, if I can say, accessible for men, because they don't really advertise much that, hey, we're here for men, come through, let's talk, get some healing. And you look at the stats when it comes to gender-based violence and how men are the primary perpetrator, and it's like, well, where are men going to heal?
Yeah.
If we don't have a almost like a reverse psychology method of dealing with this problem, then we're constantly dealing with the quote unquote victim being the women and the children. Yet we just expect to lock up these men. But if we can help them from a young age,
yes,
we can actually start to see maybe a change, you know, if we try to do things differently. So I think that's just it. Like, we have to be able to teach men and boys how to communicate, because it's very difficult for an ordinary man to communicate. I mean, I'll give you an example. We had a nappy braai just the other day, and I was the part organizer, and I was like, hey, guys, so now that our guest of honor has arrived, I think like it's a good time to, you know, check in on one another, you know, just check in on your brother and just see how someone's doing. You know, if you've never met someone before, it's even a better time because this is a safe space, you know. Literally no one was keen on that.
Yeah, I can imagine.
This was over 30 men. No one was keen to check in. And if we go with the stats, that means at least 12 of us have been sexually abused.
Yeah. So how does the abuse play out in everyday life? So what I'm thinking here by asking this question is, you've got somebody in your life and something's not right. How do you recognize in a loved one, a sibling, when something isn't okay? Because they're not going to communicate until it's too late. Usually there's a blowout or something big happens before people go for therapy. How do you start recognizing the signs that something needs to be dealt with?
I think there's like different types of signs. The usual signs are if someone is addicted to any substance, right. You know, they use alcohol or any form of drug as a crutch. Yeah. Some instances you have someone who's very snappy, someone who's prone to having like a short temper, you know. For me, I find it's in the smaller things that we kind of label as someone's personality trait.
All right.
That actually stems from some form of hurt, some form of abandonment, some form of discomfort.
Yeah.
Because someone hasn't maybe identified that they respond to a particular thing in a certain way because of a past experience, they can't identify that as a trigger.
Yeah.
So if you don't know what your triggers are, now you just know that, if you say something a bit left, like, I'm going to snap. And it's like, no, we need to unpack that a little bit, you know? And I say this because that was my experience.
Yeah.
I mean, I wouldn't say I had a short temper, but I could like switch up on a person real quick and all of a sudden I'm like so grumpy. And I never understood it. For some reason, I thought maybe it's because I don't sleep a lot, you know, like 4 or 5 hours of sleep and I'm good. Uh-huh. So I was like, yeah, maybe it's because I'm sleep deprived. I don't know, until therapy. And then it was uncovered that no, you actually have a whole bunch of things that you need to deal with. So yeah, I think if someone's hiding through substances, if someone's a bit aggressive, I know of a friend who used to punch the door when he would get angry. And it's like, where is this pent up violence coming from?
Yeah.
You know, and it's those things where it's like, okay, he's punched the door three times now. Surely we should try and get some assistance, because one day it's not going to be a door that he's punching.
That's exactly,
you know? So I think it's in that. Also, like when you meet someone, whether it's family, whether it's someone you get into a relationship with, you kind of, before we all get comfortable with each other, we see the best quote unquote version of that individual.
Mm-hmm.
And once we're comfortable with each other, that's when we kind of get to see the real person. And that's where I think we can start to identify, oh, after he's had like two or three drinks, his tongue gets a bit loose. And all of a sudden he starts saying some very uncomfortable things, you know, or, you know, when we watch any horror movie or any movie with sex scenes, he gets a little uncomfortable. You know, there's like all of these different things that we can be able to see if you are paying attention and are attentive to learning about that individual. Because if you are not attentive, then those things will definitely slide through as just, oh no, he's just like that, like don't speak to him after two drinks. That's not okay.
I think we all know somebody like that. And then what about pornography addiction, sex addiction? Would you, in your experience, after speaking to, I'm assuming, hundreds of people, are you seeing this as a thread, like a common thread?
I mean, it's definitely a common one, especially pornography. It's so, man, in this day and age, it really starts at a young age. I mean, I was introduced to pornography at the age of 13 when I got to high school.
Yeah, sure.
That wasn't even like me searching for it. It was just in the dorm room, in hostel, boarding school, and you're like hearing sounds and you're like, yo, what's going on, guys? And then you see this thing and then it just goes sideways. I think the reason why so many guys or men get addicted to pornography is that dopamine effect.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like there is so much that is, if I can say, pent up on the inside that is upsetting you, that makes you feel like your life is not where it needs to be. You might be successful, but you still feel like you're not doing enough. You might not have the body that you want to have. Like there's all of these things that are going on mentally. And then this happens to be the relief that you can have because it's something that you can control, so you think, and it's something that you can access whenever you want to. But yet you feel guilty and shameful when you're done. And that cycle continues because now that your dopamine spiked and it almost immediately dropped again, well, you need another hit, you know? So I think we've seen, I don't even know how many cases of pornography addiction. It's even to the point where someone can even say that I'm not addicted, I can stop anytime I want. And then you're like, okay, well then stop. You know, and then you realize that, okay, no, actually maybe there is something wrong and there's a void that one is trying to fill. Yeah, it's a very common one. I'll tell you that for sure.
Yeah, you know, they say that addiction is the absence of connection. And if we're not comfortable connecting with each other and being vulnerable, then something's going to fill that void. And that's where these groups are so important, and being able to have a voice is so important, because there's always going to be a Me Too that happened to Me Too. And, you know, Me Too did create the perception this was a woman's problem and only happened to women. And I think it is critically important to really get it out there. Who was it? Brendan Fraser, who famously joined the Me Too movement. And yeah, I think it's got to be more brought to the light that this is our problem as a community, as a worldwide community. This is happening to everybody. And it's not shameful because the next person next to you has also been through these things. But who are the perpetrators in your experience? You know, we think perhaps it's the PE teacher, PE teachers, or the priest. Those are the famous cases that hit the news, or the gymnastics coach. But it's women who are perpetrators as well. You know, in your experience in talking with those people in your community, how many, I'm asking for an exact number, but on average, is it women who are being the perpetrators as well?
So it's definitely not as little as one would think when it comes to like the ratio of men versus women, if there was to be that type of illustration.
Yeah.
So the last piece of research that we worked with stated that, and I could get the numbers wrong, there was like a 2% difference, where it was 31% of boys were perpetrated by men and 33.9% were perpetrated by women. Yeah. And then I think it was 28% were perpetrated by both man and woman. Yeah. I'll get the stats to you just so that we can get the numbers right. But basically, what we're seeing is that the numbers are not off, because what we find is if you're a young man, young boy actually, and your school teacher rapes you, you are a champion. Because why? You slept with the teacher.
Okay.
But that's rape, you know? And if you just reverse the roles and you have a young girl who's raped by a male teacher, it's no championing of anything, you know? So it's that double standard that we have in society where it's like, he got with the older lady. So he's like, man, he's the guy. Yeah. Right. But she got with an older man and now he's a pedophile. But so was she, you know. So I think because we have this double standard where we think, because for the man to be aroused, it must mean that he's liking what's happening. Otherwise, he wouldn't be aroused. Mm-hmm. Then there's no way that a man can be raped or anything like that by a woman, because then why would he be aroused? Yes. But it's literally the science of the body. You know, the body does what the body does. So I think once we can break away from double standards, that's when we'll be able to understand that this is a human problem that we have. I mean, even if we just take this away from rape and sexual abuse, we have men who have come to us because their mothers were burning them with oil or ashing out their cigarettes on their bodies, and they still have the scars. Yeah. It's insane what we hear. And you think to yourself that there's no way this happened to you. Like, you're fabricating a story because of how graphic, how intense, how hectic some of these stories are. And I'm just glad that we have our own support structures to be able to debrief and stuff, because sometimes I leave a session and I'm just like, I don't know how this person is managing life knowing that his mother, biological mother, did what she did to him, you know? So it's a lot. I mean, we have cases where aunts, cousins, It's very much the playing field is the same, but because in society we have this lens of looking at women as not being able to be perpetrators, because one, they are, if I could say, not as strong as a man. But we had a case a couple of years ago where there were three women who would get into a taxi with a gun and then take someone with them and then go do whatever they want to them and then leave them.
Wow.
I don't even know where those women ended up.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. So when you say you have to go through debriefing, you know, what's going through my head is just listening to you. I'm going to need some debriefing after listening to this.
Yes, please.
But in all seriousness, when you work with people on a daily basis and you're holding a space for them, you're absorbing a lot of this emotion. You are sharing it with them. So What is it, what is your debriefing look like?
Pretty much it's like a check-in session on how you feel after your session. Is there anything that triggered you? Is there anything that was like, that stood out for you? Is there anything that's still tugging at your heart or your mind? Is there anything that's making you feel uncomfortable? Do you want to take a break from the sessions? It's basically just to make sure that you're okay, because to assume that you can handle this because you've had a couple of sessions on counseling and you've, I guess got the certificate to be a counselor, that you are A-okay and you just know how to keep things going. Some of these stories are definitely triggering. Some of them you identify with and you're like, man, that is me, but you're now facilitating a space for somebody else. And because like healing is not a destination, it's a journey. So even for me, if I'm now in a session with someone and it's like literally the same experience that I've had and it's like direct trigger, I have to be able to ground myself in that moment so I can still facilitate the space for that individual. But my debrief is what's important for me, because maybe in that session, I remembered something that I had not remembered this whole time about my own experience.
Yeah.
So now I actually need to express that so that I can be able to let those emotions go or just understand them better. Yeah. So essentially the debrief is to be able to ground one, to understand if you're okay, and if you're willing to continue the following day.
Yeah, and you must have seen quite an increase of this kind of thing through COVID, because people were living on top of one another. And in that situation, it brought out the best and the worst in humanity, let's be honest. What did you see over the last 2 years? Was there a big difference? Was there something that stood out for you when we were put into a situation that was so abnormal?
There was definitely a difference. So we ended up opening up a center in Randburg, and we coined it the first men's wellness center in Africa, just because we don't know of any other.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we've closed down now just due to lack of funding. But we opened up the center because we had so many requests that were coming in via email, via WhatsApp, from various men who were in terrible divorce situations and didn't know what to do. Some were in a domestic violence situation and didn't know what to do. Some were the perpetrator, whether it was physically hitting or in whatever form of abuse towards their wife or their kids, and they wanted to get help. Some were being brought by their own families like, hey, please help him, he's got some issues that we don't know. So we opened up a center and we had no capacity to be able to help the number of calls, the number of requests that we were receiving. Hence the funding was required so that we could get some more manpower in order to assist us.
Yeah.
Long story short, we at some point had about I think it was over 30 calls that would come in on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And this spiked after there's a musician called Ricky Rick. He passed away last year around Feb, and he committed suicide. After his death, we had no way of assisting. We literally almost had 100 people call, well, not 100 people, 100 men calling in for help.
Wow.
And we literally didn't know how to do this. I mean, we're a team of four, and we're just like, we have zero capacity for this. Yes, we want to help everybody, but how? So we definitely have seen a spike through COVID. I think people being in the same space for an unexpected duration of time kind of led to to whatever that needed to pop, popping. Mm-hmm. And I say needed because it was going to pop at some point. And I think once we evaluate that we are all champagne bottles waiting to pop, we just need to figure out what type of temperature we're set in. You know, we just need to figure out if we're being shaken too much. We need to figure out if we've dealt with the bubbles and we've let the bubbles settle. And that's part of the healing journey so that when someone does shake you, they're not shaking you on top of somebody else just finished shaking you, because then you're bound to pop. Yeah, we definitely saw an influx of men calling in and just needing some help.
So you spoke at UJ, 2 weeks ago or so. What was really difficult for young men in a university environment to respond to this kind of outreach? So what was that sort of response did you get from that talk?
You know, when I speak to young people, I like to direct the conversation more to the ladies, because that takes away the attention from the guys, even though the conversation is about the guys. Because in that moment, the guys are going to want to act all macho. They're going to want to put up a tough front, and they're not going to put their hands up to ask any question or anything like that. So instead of pointing to them, I'll, for example, ask the ladies, who of you have a brother? And they'll all, majority, put their hands up. And I say, okay, cool. There's about 50 hands here. So with 50 hands, using the stats that we've previously spoken about, there's about maybe 16 to about 20 of you whose brother has been sexually abused if they are 18. Mm-hmm. And then all the ladies are like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay, so what do we do? And then that cultivates conversation. And we start to talk about, well, you need to create a safe space for your brother to be able to open up to you. If you've got a boyfriend, you need to be able to create a safe space for your boyfriend to open up to you, so that he doesn't feel like you're judging him, or he doesn't feel weak if he's going to tell you that he's upset that he failed the accounting test and now he doesn't really know how to speak to his parents. Because it doesn't have to be anything that is so drastic. It's even the small things like failing a test compared to being sexually abused.
Yeah.
That is still something that one needs to be able to deal with and have a space to express those feelings and emotions, because maybe they're embarrassed. Maybe their parents had certain expectations, or maybe they're on a bursary and they have to get certain marks. Like, there's so many things that one doesn't think of. So I think when it comes to the young ones, I primarily focus on the ladies, unless obviously the group is just boys or just men. And then we have to hit it on the nail and talk straight and just be real about it. I think the one thing that we've realized is the more real we are about the situation, the more it hits home.
Yeah.
Because trying to kind of like tiptoe around the matter doesn't really hit home. And I made an example at UJ, and there were these three boys, bless their souls. they were like literally the perfect example of what cool kids look like.
Yeah.
You know, they got the sagging pants, they got the AirPods in, like they are cool kids. And I made an example and I was like, one of those boys has been sexually abused.
Wow.
And I bet you we can't even point them out, because why they look so cool. They look like they are on top of life and they are on top of the game. And what's crazy is that in that moment, you do see who actually needs help. Because it's almost as if they feel like people can see right through them, like, yeah, you're the one.
Wow.
And it's in like the smallest of body movements.
Yeah.
You know, someone all of a sudden blinking like five times, or moving their right shoulder to find some level of comfort within their body, or all of a sudden they're fidgeting with their fingers. And you're just like, man, I wish you knew that speaking up is not actually a weakness, and it is the greatest strength that we have as a people to be able to speak up. So yeah, the kids can be tricky, but we've found a formula, if I could say, to approach them.
And it's so, so important to get to the kids. This is where we're going to change the world, when the kids, you know, can change the way they see reality. So how did you find Matrix Men? And you're a director of this organization. How did you come across it?
So I found Matrix Men in 2016. And at the time, I was looking for a place to kind of deal with my domestic violence situation, because I just felt like I had just come from the US and that relationship was in the US. And I just came home and I got straight into the grind. And whilst I was in the grind, I just felt like I'm not really sure who I am. And I'm in an industry that is very hectic, to say the least, you know, very superficial, very pretentious. It's filled with exploitation, a whole bunch of things. And I just needed some help to kind of evaluate who I am, because I felt like I got lost in the domestic violence. And now I was identifying as this person who's a victim of the situation. And that's almost like what's on my forehead. Yeah. You know, I felt sorry for myself. And, oh, it was just a whole bunch of stuff. So I was looking for a place and I Googled men's, what did I Google? It was men's mental health something. I don't remember, but it was men's mental health something. And a whole bunch of UK places came up, US places came up, and I reached out to them actually, asking if they had any organizations in South Africa that could help. The UK people responded, the US people didn't say anything. And then on like the third page of Google, I found Matrix Men. And I called Martin and I was like, hey man, can we meet up? This is who I am. This is what I've been through. And I just want to chat. And he was so willing. I think we met like 2 days later or something like that. And we met for a cup of coffee. And I told him my story. He told me his story. And I was like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Wow. And at the time, he had been running Matrix Men for about, I think, 8 years. And I just wanted to firstly get some help for myself, but also be like the poster boy for men getting help. It joined a TV show called Scandal on ETV. I knew that I'm about to be popular, because that show had about like 6 million people watching on any given night. So I'm like, Martin, I'll be the poster boy, you know, I'll tell people this is where you can go to get help. And then literally like a month in of me being the poster boy, I was like, you know what? I actually feel like I can help a lot more, because you need some help. And then I became co-director, and yeah, it's been me, Martin, and a few people have come and gone since then. But we've been together since 2016, and it's been a tough time, but there's been tremendous growth, but there's still a long way to go, you know. Still a long way to go.
So what are you needing when you say there's a long way to go? What is needed to really take this up a notch?
Support.
Okay. Financial support, awareness.
All type of support, you know. Financial support is a great one, because that can afford us to have a facility that men can come to, and we can have our sessions there. We have a space now that we're co-sharing with another organization. But support through people sharing the information that we put out there, support through people being willing to change the narrative that we have as a society about what a weak man is, you know, and support from all of our, if I can say, women and children focused organizations, because we're fighting the same battle. You know, I think if we can all join in arms, we can find a solution a lot quicker to the issues that we have, even if it's not a solution to end things, but a better way of dealing with things. So that if there is a perpetrator, we can get that perpetrator arrested and dealt with the way justice needs to be dealt with, whether it's updating what a rape kit looks like and what's in a rape kit, whether it's assisting our South African police services on how to deal with matters of domestic violence, matters of gender-based violence, because that is another space where, you know, the system is failing us. So I think support all around is something that we need. And that's why I say there's a long way to go, because there's so many boxes to tick. Yeah. You know, you can tick training the South African police services, but we haven't ticked society's view on men. So they're still not going to go and report the fact that their wives are beating them.
Yeah. I mean, you've got to get rid of the stigma.
And that's exactly,
it's just going to take work and time and concerted effort. Yeah. So where can people just know that there is somewhere where you can turn and there's no judgment, because it's not uncommon. I mean, the one thing that really stood out for me today is how common this is. It's everywhere. And yeah, there is no need to suffer in silence or suffer alone. Your life can be a lot better if you just make that move and speak to someone who can hold a space and help you live a better life. So where can people find you? Where on social media? Where on the web? How do people get in touch?
So I think the best way would be to email Matrix Men, just because we found that social media, as much as people want to see what it is that we're doing to kind of validate who we are and so forth, that's perfectly fine. So we're at Matrix Men all over social media. Some platforms are Matrix Men SA, which would just be like Matrix Men South Africa. But what we find is that people are reluctant to engage with us on social media because of what it is that we do.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we have more women following Matrix Men than we do men, yet we are here for the men, you know, which is not a problem, obviously. I mean, we are hoping that the women are carrying the information to the men in their lives, you know. Email-wise, I would suggest that you email martin@matrixmen.org. which would be MARTIN at MATRIXMEN.ORG, martin@matrixmen.org. That way he can direct you to exactly where you need to be, because we have individual sessions that we run. We also have group sessions that we run, and we also have what we call the ACES test, which is basically a 10-test questionnaire that Martin will run through with an individual just to kind of gauge where they're at in order to kind of understand where would be the best place for them to get assistance at that moment, because not everyone is fit for a group environment, and also not everyone is fit for an isolated individual environment. So I would suggest martin@matrixmen.org for sure.
Okay, so I'll put all of those contact details in the show description. So the links will be there and obviously all over our social media. So Hungani, thank you so much for carrying the light and doing what you do. It's so incredibly important. I wish you all the strength in your quest to make this world a better place.
Thank you so much. And I appreciate you having me on your platform. I don't take it for granted at all. It's not every day that you meet someone like you who is just so willing to provide a platform for what it is that we stand for and what it is that we talk about. You know, it's not the lightest of conversations, you know, and sometimes it can be very daunting to even go in that direction of conversation. So I appreciate you. I appreciate your time. And I also appreciate your listeners, you know, and I really hope that we we could have shed some light regarding this topic. And I'll send you some links that you can add to the description for the stats if anyone wants to read. Some of them are a bit long because it is research papers and so forth. But I think if anyone is willing to check out the stats, it would be a great benefit. So thank you so much, Nikki.
Thank you so much.
Thank you once again for joining me for another episode of the Reinvent Health Podcast. As usual, all of my guests' details can be found in the show notes page on Apple Podcast, Anchor, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts. Please don't forget to rate on Apple and leave a review.